And we're holding on Lamed Hey Amud Aleph, bit above the middle of the Amud, 8-9 lines from top. You may have one dot in your Gemara. Line against your Nitna. The Gemara says, Bominei Rava made Rav Nachman. Rava asked Rav Nachman, Yesh me'ila b'kai namos oloi. When it comes to a person declares something koinam, which we've been saying throughout the Masechta, is a nickname for a korban, and it means that he's making that this thing is also to him like a korban. So in short, he's made a neder on the thing, where now it's also to him. Yesh me'ila b'koinamos oloi. Does me'ila apply to such a thing or not? Meaning, we know, we talked about yesterday, about hektish, and we know that if you have something that belongs to hektish, and then a person uses it, then there are dinim of me'ila involved. In particular, if he does it b'shogig, then he has to, if he does it b'mezid, he has to pay hektish. And if he does it b'shogig, additionally, he has to bring a korban. So now, would this concept apply to a koinam as well? The Ran mentions, specifically, as far as the question would be, would the person actually be chayev a korban? Would he be chayev, because we say in morning davening, we mentioned the asham me'ilas, the osham that a person brings when he commits me'ila, would he bring an osham for such a thing as considered as though he's having hanah from kodshim? The Rosh also mentions the point, about actually paying hektish. So according to him, it sounds like it would be, the Gemara is asking whether it would be completely like hektish in the sense that you actually have to pay back hektish, even though unlike in the case of regular hektish, this didn't belong to hektish all along. You declared it a koinam, but you didn't actually give it to hektish. But nevertheless, maybe you should be paying the value of it, keren v'chomish, the value of it plus 25% to hektish. Anyway, oiloi or not. That was the question. Omalei. Said of Nachman answers him Tinisuha. We can learn from our Mishnah that that we would say that it is. We said we have the case we discussed in our Mishnah that in a case where one person is also to have anah from the other. So we said he can still return him as lost object, and we had the whole discussion in the Gemara yesterday about what is the scenario over there and the various opinions about who's allowed to return to who and what the circumstances are. But anyway, we said, we said in a place where there is an expected schar for returning the lost object, either because, as the Ran said, we're talking about the case where he actually took time off work to return it, and then he's entitled to a certain amount of reimbursement for his time. Or, as the Rambam says, just we're talking about a place where the local minhag is that if you return somebody's lost object, he gives you a tip. Anyway, we learned yesterday that here the scenario is that you can't do that, whether because you're also to have anah from him and therefore you can't take his money, or whether because on the contrary he's also in you and therefore you can't forego the money because then he would be having anah from you, or whether because as we said we're talking about a scenario where you don't even want the money because it would be beneath your dignity, whatever, all of the various permutations that we talked about yesterday. Anyway, the Mishnah had said tipol hanah lehektish. We said the money goes to hektish. Now, if it was just a matter of that the money is also for you to have, then the usual expression for it throughout Shas would be Yolach the Yaramelach, would be that he should take that Hanah and throw it into the Yaramelach, throw it into the Dead Sea, where nobody's ever going to see it again, because no ships even traverse the Yaramelach, and therefore that's it, it'll be out of the way. The fact that the Mishnah doesn't say that, Lememra ki Hektish, it means to say, evidently, that that a koinam is in fact like hektish. Ma hektish yesh by me'ila. So just like me'ila applies to hektish, af koinamus yesh by me'ila. So yes, the same thing would apply to a koinam. You declare that something is also in a koinam. It would mean that it's considered like hektish to a certain extent. According to the Ran, just insofar as if then you used it b'shogig, you'd bring an asham me'ilas. And according to the Rosh, and according to the Rosh, and the Rambam actually seems to phrase it the same way as well, that it would mean that you'd actually be paying hektish for the value of it. So that's the point. In other words, you can't say, in this case, you can't take something that ought to belong to hektish and throw it into the Yaramelach, which is why the Mishnah is saying you have to give it to hektish. The Gemara says, Ketanoi. This is actually subject to a machlokes tanoim. So Rav Nachman is bringing a proof from our Mishnah that that's the case, but the Gemara is saying you should know not everybody agrees to that. There was in fact a machlokes tanoim on that point. A braisa says koinam kikerzu hekdish. If a person says a koinam that this a loshen of a neder that this bread should be considered hekdish. Now again, he doesn't mean that it's actual hekdish as he's giving it to the Bis Mikdash. He just means that it's also to everybody as if it was hekdish. V'ochla, and he eats it ben hu ben chaveroi, whether he eats it or whether somebody else eats it. He made it also to everybody. Therefore mahu. Therefore he committed me'ila on it. Lefichach, now because we're saying that it's considered hektish, yesh lapidyon, then therefore it is possible to redeem it from hektish. It's possible to, like with any other hektish, to buy it back from hektish, give hektish the value of the thing, plus the chomesh, and now it becomes cholin again. The Ran wonders, he says, so what does that mean? In that case, would we say that if he does that, then the koinam goes away, and therefore it actually becomes mutter to him? Or does it just mean that, does it just mean that he's obligated to pay hektish, but the thing still stays osur? Or does it in fact mean maybe that now the thing becomes mutter as a result of paying hektish? The man leaves the question open. Anyway, so on the other hand, the braisa continues, kiko zu alayla hektish. On the other hand, if he says this bread is also to me as if it were hektish, so now it's not also to everybody else. So now that's a different kind of thing. But ochla, now if he eats it, humal, so he has committed me'ila, chavera le'mal, but his friend, if somebody else were to eat it, he's not, because it's never also to the other person in the first place. He only said it's also to me. Therefore, there's no way of redeeming it because you can't, to that extent, a neder that's chal only on an individual or only on certain people is not truly like hektish enough that it should have the neder, because after all, hektish is also to everybody. So real hektish, you would be able to be poided. Real hektish has a strong enough kedusha that now that kedusha, when you want to be poided, when you want to redeem it from hektish, that kedusha is able to be transferred from the hektish object onto the money. But over here, we're saying it's a weaker kind of kedusha. The very fact that it's also only to you and not to everybody else means that it's a weaker kind of kedusha. It's not strong enough to go onto the money instead. So therefore, the result is you can't be paid. Divir a mayor, that's what the mayor says. The chum say, either way, you haven't committed me'ila. Lafisha ain't me'ila, but kainamas. Because there's no me'ila when it comes to a koinam. So they're disagreeing with the whole premise of me'ila applying in this case. So we see that there's machlokes tanoim on this point. Our Mishnah then would be, our Mishnah with the implication that something that you can't have hana from is considered hektish would be like Reb Meir. Reb Nachman is pointing out that our Mishnah, when it says that you take when you take the schar for returning a lost object and you give it to hektish, then that implies to begin with that anything that's also to you is hektish. That would only be according to the mayor. The Chachamim would disagree. Now that's the way the Ram learns this piece. The Rosh has a slightly different girsa at the beginning. He takes out the word koinam at the beginning. So he says according to the Ran, in short, what we said is both cases of the Braisa are talking about where the person made a neder, not where he actually made the thing hektish, but we made a neder to make it off limits. Just the first part of the Braisa is talking about that he made it off limits to everyone. So in that sense, it is like hektish, because hektish is also off limits to everybody. And in the second case, he made it off limits only to himself. The Rosh learns differently. He says the first case of the Braisa is talking about just where he made it real honest to goodness hektish. Forget the word koinam, he takes out that word, just kikuzu hektish, he declared that this bread is hektish. So then me'ila would apply. So the Rosh says in that case, according to that, then that part of the Braisa is very poshut. It's very simple. There's no reason to mention it at all. It's just by way of introduction to the next case. So then according to him, when the Chachamim say ben kach or ben kach, it's not really, he says, that's not the correct girsa. It would rather be echad zev, echad zev, loymal. The Chachamim would be disagreeing strictly in the second case. According to the Rosh, they have no reason to disagree in the first case. Of course, if the thing is real hektish, if you said, I am giving this bread to hektish, there's no question the Ilah applies. Nobody is going to disagree about that. But in the Sefer, where he says it's also only to me, then you would have, the mayor would say that only the person who made the nether is moyel if he does it afterwards, but not the person who didn't. Not the person to whom it's not osir, because after all, it's not osir to him. And the chachamim would say, no, neither one of them has committed ne'ilah, even in that case, because ain ne'ilah b'koynamas. So it comes out the same, similar kind of thing, that the chachamim would disagree and say that there's no ne'ilah in koynamas, but according to the Ran, they would be disagreeing on both cases, and according to the Rosh, only on the second case. Anyway, the point is, again, that our Mishnah is only according to the mayor. The Ran points out that first of all, Rav Nachman explains our Mishnah to be going according to the mayor. So that's a reason to pass them like the mayor. We may have, fine, we're saying that in the Braisa there's Machlokas, Rav Meir, and the Chachamim on that, but our Mishnah is a Stam Mishnah, and Rav Nachman is understanding it like Rav Meir, and therefore when you have a concept that's mentioned in other places in Shas, when you have a Stam Mishnah according to one opinion, and then you have a Braisa that tells us that it's actually only according to one opinion, generally speaking, the Halacha is going to follow the Mishnah, because the Mishnah overrides, the Mishnah is stronger than the Braisa. Also, the Ran points out, there's a Gemara in Shavuos that discusses this point, and there the Gemara says that actually the opinions may be reversed, that it might be that that the opinion reattributed to the mayor, Yesh Me'ilah B'Koynamas, is actually the Chachamim, and vice versa, and in that case, the Halacha would be like the Chachamim against the mayor, as it usually is. So that's the Halacha. There is Me'ilah when it comes to Koynamas. The Rambam passed in the same way in Hilchos Nedarim. So now within this, the Gemara asks, so now here's a question within that din. Omelet of Acha Bredir of Ivya Lord of Ashi. So now the Acha Bredir of Ivya asks Rav Ashi a question within that issue. Within, we're saying that according to Rav Meir, and we're saying in the end, this is the halacha, that Yesh Me'ilah B'Koynamas. So now suppose the following case. Kikri Alecha. Suppose that Reuven says to Shimon, my bread should be also to you, the Nosnaloi Matana, and afterwards he takes that bread and gives it to Shimon. Now, we discussed yesterday whether the bread is also to Shimon at that point. We said, Rava had said that it is, and we said that the only way it would become mutter to Shimon would be if Reuven gives it to somebody else, and then that somebody else gives it to Shimon. So now the case is that Reuven directly gave it to Shimon. The question would be, Mimal. So you're saying that there was Me'ilah involved, but who has committed Me'ilah in this case? Who is the one who we would say is Chayiv in the Korban of Me'ilah? So let's say, for example, this was B'Shoyig in order to be Chayiv a Korban, because you're not Chayiv a Korban for Me'ilah B'Meiz. So who is it that would have committed Me'ilah? So that's the thing. So if a person does Me'ilah B'Mezid, then it's Machloikus of the Gemara in a couple of places. What he's Chayiv, the halacha is that he's Chayiv Malchus. Then he has to pay back Hekdesh. If it was B'Shogeg, then he has to pay back Hekdesh, and he brings a Korban Osher. So now, if Reuven said that this loaf of bread is also to you, Shimon, and then he gives that bread to Shimon, which one of them has committed Me'ilah? Should we say limel noisin? Should we say that the one who's giving it, that Reuven, should be the one chayev from Me'ilah? Why? Halay asir alay. It's not osir on him. The bread is not osir to him. He only said it's osir to Shimon. So how can we say that now Reuven giving that bread to Shimon should make him liable from Me'ilah? Now the Ran points out that suppose, in general, let's talk about a general case, the Ran says. Reuven imposes a neder on Shimon, and he says, such and such an object of mine is also to you, Shimon. Now, if afterwards he gives that thing to Shimon to eat, is he over on anything? So the Rambam says that in fact, even though the thing is only also on Shimon, Reuven would still be over because he's the one who made the nether, and he's the one, therefore, is over on Bal Yachol Dvarim, that he's transgressing his word. So the Ran says, from our Gemara, it seems that not, because our Gemara is saying that Reuven should not be chayiv from Me'ilah. The Ran evidently understands that Me'ilah is part of the whole thing of Bal Yachil, that he's not allowed to transgress his word. So if our Gemara is saying that Reuven can't be chayiv from Me'ilah for that, that would imply that he can't be chayiv for Bal Yachil either. So he says this would be a proof against the Rambam's opinion. On the other hand, of course, for the Rambam, the obvious answer would be that the Rambam would hold that these are two different things. Bal Yachal is one thing, Me'ilah is another. Yes, we could say that Reuben is over on Bal Yachal. The Gemara is not even addressing that point, but can we say that he's over on Me'ilah to the extent that he would have to bring a korban? Maybe not necessarily. Anyway, so on the face of it, Reuben can't be chayiv for Me'ilah because the thing is not also to him. You can't say that it's considered hekdesh relative to him. Should we say limo mekabel? Should Shimon the recipient be committing Me'ilah? No. Yochel da'omer hetera ba'isi isura lo ba'isi. Can't he? He should have every right to say, I only want to receive something which is mutter. I don't want to receive something which is osur. If I knew that this bread was osur to me, I wouldn't want to receive it. So therefore, it wouldn't be considered that he was actually zocheh in it. Now, the Ran and the Rosh point out, had a person actually himself taken something out of the Rishus and Hekdesh, then we wouldn't say that. You think about it, Me'ilah, by definition, Me'ilah v'shogeg means the person didn't know that it belonged to Hekdesh. Otherwise, where's the shogeg? So the regular case where a person commits Me'ilah means that there's an object that belongs to Hekdesh, let's say money that belongs to Hekdesh, and he goes and spends it, not realizing that it belongs to Hekdesh, and we said he committed Me'ilah. The difference is, the Ran and the Rosh say, that there he's actually doing something. He or Shimon is not actually doing anything. He's only receiving something from Reuben. So he has every right to argue, if I had known that this was hektish, I wouldn't have been willing to receive it. Well, then by that token, in that case, once we find out that it's hektish, then we can't make him chayiv from Me'ilah because he hasn't actually truly received it. So the question would be, that's Rav Acha Bar Edin of Ivya asked Rav Ashi, in this case then, when it's only osur on Shimon and not on Reuben, who would be the one, if Reuven then goes and gives it to Shimon, the Shogeg, who would be the one who's chayiv from Me'ilah? Amalei, so Rav Ashi answers him, Mekabel Ma'al L'Chshayotz. The recipient does commit Me'ilah, but not right away as soon as he receives it, because yes, you have a valid point. He could say that when I received it, I didn't know that it was hektish and I wouldn't have wanted to receive it, but when he spends it. So for example, when he eats the bread, or when he gives it to somebody else, then at that point, then the recipient, Shimon, will have committed Me'ilah. Because after all, Shekol HaMotzi, Mois Hekdesh L'Cholin, Kesavar Shekholin, who, after all, the classic case where a person spends money of Hekdesh and uses it as though it were Cholin, thinking that it was actually Cholin money, Moil, at that point he's committing Me'ilah, so fine. In other words, the Ran says exactly what we just said. As far as being Zoychen and as far as acquiring it, of course, you can say that he hasn't acquired it, that you can't make him acquire it against his will, and he wouldn't have wanted to acquire it if he knew that it was hektish. But when it comes to spending it, we don't make that distinction. Any case where a person is spending money of hektish as though it were cholin, even and he didn't know what was going on, that is the classic definition of me'ilah b'shogeg, and he's chayiv for a korban. So exactly the same thing over here. When Shimon goes and spends that bread, eats it or gives it to somebody else or whatever, at that point he will have committed me'ilah because at that point he's actually done a ma'aseh with it, giving it or eating it or whatever. So af zeh moil, the same way. In this case, yes, Shimon will have committed me'ilah at that point. Okay, one more thing in this connection. The Ran brings an interesting question from the Yerushalmi. If you make a neder not to have hanah from a loaf of bread, so obviously you're not allowed to eat it. You also wouldn't be allowed to sell it or whatever. Would you be allowed to, if the bread is fresh out of the oven, would you be allowed to warm up your hands with it? And the Yerushalmi, the Ran says the Yerushalmi leaves the question open. Is that the thing considered a hanah or not? We touched on the other day, actually, that the Achronim talk about the general question, when you have something that's osur by a neder, now we know, when you have something the Torah tells us you're not allowed to eat, generally speaking, you're allowed to have hanah from it, and certainly you're allowed to have hanah not in the usual way of eating, with certain exceptions where the Torah makes clear that you can't. For example, basar v'chalav, so is a neder in the same category, or would we say that a neder is also osur, shaloi kederach hanah osur, because after all, the Torah doesn't say the words lo yoychal, you have a Gemara in Pesachim that says that in general, when the Torah says on something, don't eat it, usually it means an Issur Hanah, unless the Torah tells you otherwise. But here, after all, it doesn't say the words Lo Yoychal on a neder, so maybe it would be different. Okay. New topic, the Mishnah says. not really new topic, still talking, I mean, the whole parak is going to be talking about the case of Mudr Hanah Mechaver, where one person has made a neder not to have Hanah from another one, so we're going through the various things that he's allowed to do for him. So far we said that he's allowed to pay off a debt for him, and we talked about what kind of debt exactly were we talking about. We said he can pay his machta shekel, he can return his lost object, according to all the details that we talked about yesterday. So now the next thing. The Mishnah says, v'tonem es trumosoi umasroisav l'daita. Another thing is that now you have, again, let's remember, you have the two characters that we're dealing with throughout the perek are the madir and the mudir. The madir is the one who makes the neder, the mudir is the one who is also to have anav. So the classic example would be that Shimon is making a neder and saying Reuven is also to have anav. Shimon and his nechasim are off limits for Reuven to have anav. Nevertheless, though, Shimon is allowed to take truma and meiser for Reuven l'daitai with his das. Now, what does that mean? We're going to discuss in the Gemara tomorrow, Best Hashem. Do we mean that he's using his own fruit as truma and meiser on behalf of Reuven's, and that way Reuven is not having to take his own fruit and declare it truma and meiser? Or are we talking about just that he is appointed a shliach to take truma and meiser out of Reuven's own fruits? And when we say l'daitai, whose das are we talking about? We're going to discuss that whole point in the Gemara later on Lamed Vav Amud Beis. Another din, umakliv olav, and suppose that Shimon is a Kohen, then he is still alive, he is still allowed to offer on behalf of Reuven his korbanos. Kine zavim, for example, if Reuven is a zav, and there's different kinds of zav, there's a difference how many emissions of ziva he had, but in particular, if he had three or more, then he becomes he's actually chayav in a korban. He has to tell whether he has two or three, he has to count seven clean days, and there are various special dinim that apply to him. But then at the end, if he had three or more flows, then he has to bring a korban. The korban consists of two birds. So throughout Shas, when a person is bringing a pair of birds, we call it a king, we call it a nest. Because typically you literally have a nest of two birds that you bring as, or a cage or whatever, two birds that you bring as a korban. Anyway, supposing that Shimon suppose that Shimon has made a neder that Reuven is also to have anav from him, nevertheless, Shimon is allowed to bring Reuven's korbanos on his behalf. Again, now here we're not talking about that Shimon takes birds of his own and brings them on behalf of Reuven, the pashtus. Here we're just talking about that Reuven brings a korban to the Beis Mikdash, and Shimon is going to offer it on his behalf. In fact, actually, the Yerushalmi says it may even work, even if Shimon does donate birds of his own for the purpose, because it would be one of these things, mitzvahs lav lahonis nitnu, that mitzvahs are not considered a hana, but the more obvious way of understanding, the Ran says we're talking about if he's a Kohen, so he's evidently understanding, not like the Yerushalmi, we don't mean that he's actually giving birds on Reuven's behalf, we just mean Reuven has brought the birds to the Beis Mikdash after a ziva, and Shimon happens to be the Kohen who's marked with them. So he's allowed to do that. Similar to the kine zavos, similarly a zava, you have the same kind of thing. There's different kinds of zava, but you have the type where she's had three or more flows of blood, where there at the end she has to, again, also she has to bring two korbanos, two birds. So again, the same thing. Kine yodos, the same thing. If the mudr hanah, if Reuven is not Reuven a man, but rather Rachel a woman, and she gave birth, And she's bringing birds for her korban, the same kind of thing. So Shimon, as a Kohen, is allowed to be mocked with them on their behalf. With all of those, the idea is because he's not actually because he's doing a mitzvah for him, and it's not considered a hanah, as we're going to see in the Gemara. Chatois v'ashamos. So we're going to see in the Gemara exactly what the deal is with these korbanos. Chatois v'ashamos. Similarly, the Kohen Shimon can also offer on behalf of Reuven the Mudr Hanah a chatas or an asham. And another din. And again, we're going to see in the Gemara why that is and what specific types of, are we talking about all korbanos? Are we talking about all korbanos across the board? Or are we limiting this din only to a certain type of, only to korbanos for a specific purpose? We'll see that in the Gemara. Another din, umalamde medrash halachas va'agadis, another din, Shimon, even though Reuven is also to have enough from him, he is allowed to do mitzvahs for him, mitzvahs lav lahonis nitnu, as we learned before. So therefore, Shimon would be allowed to teach Reuven medrash, which means the Rosh defines medrash as the sfarim like sifra and sifri, which go and darshan the psukim and derive halachas from them. Maybe it would also include what we usually think of as medrash, like medrash rabba, which teaches agadta, but perhaps that would be included in agadis, that the mission is going to say soon. Anyway, so medrash would be medrash halacha. Halachas would be the Rosh says, means halachas l'moshe m'sinai, he's allowed to teach him that. But agadis. And agadta, things where what we think of as agadta, where the chachamim gave us a moral lesson or something like that based on psukim. So he's allowed to teach him all those things because that's a mitzvah, and mitzvah slav lahonis. The hana of having a mitzvah done for you is not considered a hana. Therefore, when Shimon is teaching Reuven, we can't say that Reuven is actually having hana from Shimon because the hana is the hana of a mitzvah, and that doesn't count. Ava lo yilam denu mikra. However, Shimon would not be allowed to teach Reuven mikra, which is Tanakh, and we're going to see in the Gemara later on. Daflam and Zion. We're going to talk about why there should be that distinction. Ava Malamed, who was born of Ves Benoist of Mikra. Now, even then, even though Shimon is not allowed to teach Reuven Mikra in these circumstances, but he would be allowed to teach Reuven's sons or daughters Mikra, because their father is not really getting a direct Hanah from it. So the father himself is not, in terms of the fact that Reuven has an obligation to teach his son's mitzvah, is to teach his son's Torah. Again, mitzvah slav lahonis nitnu. In terms of the fact that Shimon is saving Reuven from having to pay tuition, that would be only a grumma of hana, and we've learned already before that you can't do direct hana, but you can do mavriach harim. He said you can chase away a lion from his property, meaning make it that he doesn't have to pay something that otherwise he would have, and this would be an example of that. So therefore, that is why it would be mutter. Interesting, by the way, that the Mishnah is using the expression to teach. Tosfos also points out, by the way, that even in places where, in fact, they do charge for teaching, even places where they do charge tuition, but still, it's not like he has to pay you. So it's not like what we learned in the previous Mishnah about the schar for giving back a lost object where it has to go to Hektish. Here we're not saying that at all because here he doesn't really have to pay him at all. So it's interesting that the Mishnah is mentioning the word as benoisav, because in fact there is a machloikas elsewhere in the Gemara in Sota, in Mishnah, and the Gemara in Sota, to what extent girls should be taught Torah. So our Mishnah would seem to be on the side saying that they should. So the halacha is that the actual technical halacha is that a person doesn't have a chiyuv to teach his daughter's Torah, and to a certain extent the Chachamim discouraged it. But of course, then you have, you know, nowadays in the last 100 years you have Beis Yaakov and then Beis Rivka and so forth. But the idea that nowadays you have to have a certain chinuch for girls, they don't receive enough of it at home anymore, and therefore you're back to that women do that girls and women do learn Tanakh and maybe and very often other areas of Torah as well, because that's what they need in order to develop as good Jews. That I've talked about a lot of times, for example, that it's important for them to learn Chassidus for that reason, to develop Ava and Yira of Hashem. After all, they have a mitzvah of that too. So yeah. Okay. So the Gemara says, this that we're saying in the Mishnah, that if Shimon is, that again, Shimon has made a neder that Reuven is also to have a nov. Nevertheless, we're saying that Shimon is allowed to offer korbanos on Reuven's behalf. So let's work that out. Ibayilu, the Gemara says the Chachamim had a question. Hani kahani shluchi di danhavu or shluchi di shmaya? Are the kohenim considered shluchim of Hashem? Let's start out with are they considered shluchi di danhavu? Are they considered shluchim of ours? We are the ones who are we Yisraelim are the ones who are bringing korbanos and delegating it to the kohenim. Or shluchi di shmaya? Or are they shluchim of Hashem? So the Gemara says, "L'may nachmina." What would be the practical difference? Would be for the case of our Mishnah, "L'mudr hanah." When Reuven is also to have hanah from Shimon, is Shimon allowed to offer korbanos that Reuven brings to the Beis Mikdash? If you say that the Kohenim are considered the shliach of the one who brings the korban, hamahani leva also. Well, then you have a problem on the face of it. Then Shimon is causing Reuven a hanah by doing his shlichus. Then that would be also. It's one thing. The Ran says if we were to say that if we were to say that the shluchim of Hashem. Now it is true, as the Gemara is going to point out soon, that the korbanos we're talking about in our Mishnah all have the effect of making that Reuven, once the korban is brought, will be able to eat kodshim, which is of course a hanah from him. But fine, that's a hanah, but that's an indirect hanah. Shimon is not directly giving Reuven that hanah. That's an indirect thing. As a result of bringing the korban, Reuven becomes mutter to eat kodshim. Therefore you could say Shimon is allowed to do it. But if you say that Shimon is considered Reuven's shliach, isn't that considered a direct hanah that he's accomplishing his shlichus? Now the Ran points out, and the Ran and Tosfos point out that actually there's Gemaras elsewhere, there's Gemara in Kiddushin in particular, that discusses the same point and answers very simply. Obviously, they're shluchim d'shmaya, because if they were considered our shluchim, then where do you ever find a case in halacha where a person themselves can't accomplish something, but only their shliach can accomplish it? So what is it? You know, we're Yisraelim. The Torah tells us that we can't offer our korbanos ourselves. We have to delegate it to the kohenim. If you say the shluchim didan, what's the logic? If my shliach can do it, surely I should be able to do it as well. And yet we know it's not so. So therefore, it has to be the shluchim d'shmaya. So why is the Gemara even asking the question over here? Why does it not just bring that statement of Rav Huna over there and answer the whole thing? So the Ran and Tosfos both mention, because over here the Gemara says, fine, we have Rav Huna's Svara. We want to see if we can bear it out from a Mishnah or a Braisa. A statement of Amoroyim, after all, another Amora can always contradict. A Mishnah or a Braisa, they can't. So the Gemara, where possible, would like to back up something with a statement from a Mishnah or a Braisa. Tosfos elsewhere discusses another point, actually, which is the Gemara may be asking, fine, of course, to a certain extent, they're shluchim d'shmaya, based on that svara. But are they exclusively shluchim d'shmaya, or is there a component of being shluchim didan, of being our shluchim as well? And if there was, then that would affect the case of our Mishnah, where Reuven is also to have hanah from Shimon. Would Shimon be able to offer his korban? If we said that there's any component of Shimon being Reuven's shliach, then maybe not, because that would be him doing a direct hanah for him. So iyam, that's the Gemara teaches. Iyam shluchim didan habu. If you say that the kohenim are considered or shluchim, hamahanilei, then we see that Shimon is doing a direct hanah to Reuven, but also, therefore, it should be also to do that. Viyam shluchim d'shmaya. But if you say that the kohenim for this purpose are considered only shluchim of Hashem, shori, then it should be mutter. So the Gemara says, what's the deal with that? What are the kohenim considered? Again, we could say that the question is, are they exclusively shluchim d'shmaya or shluchim didan? Or you could say, like Tosfos says elsewhere, that the question is, we know they're shluchim d'shmaya to a certain extent because of Rav Huna's svara, that how is it possible that only they can bring the korbanos if they were considered our shluchim, but nevertheless, the Gemara is saying they may be shluchim d'shmaya as well as shluchim didan, and that would be the problem. Well, the Gemara says, Tashma, let's prove from our Mishnah. Ditnan makriv olav kinei zavin fula. We said that Shimon is able to offer on behalf of Reuven the birds that are zava, etc. birds. So, iyamet shluchim didan. So now, if you were to say the kohenim are considered or shluchim, kamahanilei, well, then he's bringing him a hanah. Obviously, the fact that he's allowed to shows that because the kohenim are not considered or shluchim at all. They're considered strictly shluchim of Hashem. So therefore, again, the fact that maybe the fact that Reuven gets some kind of benefit out of that korban being brought, namely that now he's not a mechusa kapara, now he can eat korbanos, is not considered a direct enough hanah for that to be a problem. But the Gemara says, no, v'litai meich, no, because according to your svara, that you're even bringing up on Mishnah in this connection, listni makriv olav korbanos, then you can ask, why does the Mishnah have to list the various kinds of korbanos? You want a list of the korbanos, go to Masechta Zvachim. Why would the Mishnah be giving us a specific list? Kine Zobin, Kine Zobis, Kine Yodis, Chatoris Vashamas. Maybe on the contrary. Maybe you could say that that our Mishnah is talking about Mechusre Kapara, specifically the case of a Zov or a Zova or a Yoledis, and as the Gemara is going to point out soon, also in Mitzora, all of them are in the category called Mechusre Kapara. It was in Rambam Shlosh Parakim a couple of days ago. That these people are, their tara is not complete until they bring their korban. So you have different levels of tumma that a person can have. You have a person becomes tumma, let's say, by a sheret. They just go to the mikveh, they have head of shemesh, and that's that. Then you have a tumma mess who, in addition, needs to be sprinkled with parad in the water. And then you have certain kinds of tmeim, a zava, etc., where their tara is not fully complete until they bring their korban. So they have to go through everything. They have to go to the mikveh, they have to have head of shemesh, and they have to bring a korban. So now, our Mishnah is mentioning specifically cases of mechusre kapara. So they would be different. Because Rabbi Yechanan says, now, whenever you're bringing a person, a korban on behalf of a person, you need their das, you need their consent to do it. Nobody else can be mocked with it for him without his das, because after all, most korbanos are meant in order to bring kapara for an aveira. So therefore, the person has to know that the korban is actually, and has to agree that the korban is being brought on his behalf. Chutz mi mechusre kapara, with the exception, Rabbi Yechanan says, of mechusre kapara, with them you don't need their das. And we can show that, Shari Adam, maybe korban al bonav al bnois vaktanim. Because we see that suppose that a man has a child who is young, who's below bar or bas mitzvah, and they are mechusre kapara, then you would be able to, then the father can bring a korban on their behalf in order for them to be allowed to eat korban. So let's say, in other words, let's say, for example, a boy becomes a zav, and it's possible a person in principle can become a zav, and similarly a girl can become a zava at any age. In the case of a zav, the Mishnah tells us the minimum. There's a difference between nida and zava. The earliest a girl can become a zava is 10 days old. Whatever. Let's not get into that level of detail. The point is that a boy or a girl can become a zav or a zava long before their bar bas mitzvah. If that happens, then like any zav or zava, they're also to eat kodshim until their korban is brought, and the father can bring a korban on their behalf even without their das, which it has to be when they're children. They don't have das. And nevertheless, he can. And how does Rabbi Yechanan know that? Shenema zois Torah Sazov, because the pasuk says this is the Torah of the Zov, and we learn from that since it doesn't specify what age Zov we're talking about, it means bein gadol, bein katan. It means whether the Zov is an adult, whether it's a child. Either way, the korban is brought, and since the katan himself doesn't have das to bring his own korban, necessarily it has to mean that the father is bringing the korban on behalf of the child. So therefore, you see that a Zov and similarly mechusre and similar mechusre kapara are different. You don't need their das to bring a korban in the first place. Well, then, in that case, so you could say our Mishnah, when it says that Shimon, who has made a neder that Reuben is also to have enough from him, is able to bring Reuben's korbanos. What kind of korbanos? Specifically, the ones where Reuben is mechusre kapara, because those you don't even need Reuben's das. But you could argue that any one where he needs Reuben's das, maybe we would say he's considered Reuben's shliach, and as a shliach, then he can't, because that would be giving him anah. So the Gemara says, let's delve into the detail of what Rabbi Yochanan is saying. So you're telling me, Rabbi Yochanan, that we're learning the fact that a father can bring a korban on behalf of his son who is a zav. We're learning from the word zois teras hazav. So the Gemara asks, Ela me'atel Rabbi Yochanan. So according to Rabbi Yochanan, how are you going to douse him? You have a similar word teras in the case of a woman who gives birth. Zois teras hayaledes. Remember, the pasuk says this is the Torah of a woman who gave birth. That she brings korbanos. What are you going to say? Ben tano, ben gola? Are you going to learn from the word todas over there also that it means whether the woman who gave birth is a tano or a gola? Either way, somebody else can bring. Either way, the korbanos are brought. But tana bas later he can a woman can a tana bchalal give birth? No, as the Gemara is going to say. So therefore, if you can't learn the word todas by your ledes to include a tana, what's Rabbi Yechanan's basis for saying that the word todas by a zav means a cotton either? Maybe the word todas is meant for a different drasha, just like necessarily it has to be by a woman who gave birth. because Vahotani Rabibi Kamed Rab Nachman, Rabibi taught a braisa in front of Rab Nachman. Actually, the Shalom HaKadosh says that the name is supposed to be pronounced Bevi, which is the name of a person that you find in various places in Ezra and Nehemiah. So anyway, Rabibi or Rabbevi, whatever, teaches a braisa Kamed Rab Nachman in front of Rab Nachman. The braisa says, Shalosh Noshim Meshamshis B'moich. There are three women who can use moich, which is a wad of cotton or some other absorbent material, when they're having relations. We learned about this in Yevamos and in Ksubos. Rashi, in a number of places, explained that it means she uses the moich before they have relations. She sticks the moich into Osei Mokim, so that way, when she and her husband have relations, then the moich will absorb the zera, and she won't become pregnant. Tosfos, in all those places, disagrees. The Ran over here says similarly to Rashi over there, that it means that they put in moich before they have relations. And in fact, he says not just they're allowed to, but chayovis, he says they would be obligated to, because otherwise there's sakana with these three women that if they become pregnant, the pregnancy and the birth may kill them, and therefore they're required to use moich. Tosfos in a number of places in Shas disagrees with that and says that no, it can't possibly mean that. How can you put in a moich over there before having relations? Then it comes out the husband's zera is being absorbed by the stuff. That would be the equivalent of motzi zera l'matala. So rather, Tosfos in those places, in Yevamos and in Ksubos, discusses that what it means is she's allowed to wipe with moich afterwards in order to wipe out the zera. The point being, in other words, that even though the point is, Tosfos discusses in those places, would we say that a woman is also in Ashkosa Zera? We know certainly a man is also to be Motzi Zera Lavatala, or to waste seed in any way. Does a woman have the same chiyu? So we might say that we might say that normally a woman is not allowed to do that, but here we would make an exception because of the potential sakana involved. Anyway, the braisa goes on to say, Ktana umoberes manika. The three women in question are a ktana, a girl below bas mitzvah, umoberes, a woman who's already pregnant, umanika, and a woman who's nursing. And particularly, Ktana Shematisa Abba Batomus. In the case of Ktana, the reason is because she may become pregnant and die, because she's not going to be able to carry the baby and bear it at her age. In those other places, in Yevamos and Ksubos, the Gemara defines it more narrowly. We're talking about when the girl is between 11 and 12 years old, because before 11, she's not going to be able to become pregnant anyhow. At above 12, she can safely carry the baby. So Dafka, we're talking about between age 11 and 12. And then in those places, the Gemara also explains what the potential problem is with a pregnant woman, that the baby that she's carrying may be harmed, she may become pregnant with a second baby who gets harmed, whatever. Rashi and Tosfos discuss that in those other places as well. A nursing woman is because her milk supply is gonna dry up or change consistency or whatever, and then her baby won't be able to nurse, whatever the case. So the mayor says, Right. So the Gemara does mention in other places that relations are good for the baby certain times of pregnancy and not so good at others. Right. During the last 6 months of the pregnancy in particular, it's good for the baby. Right. But no. So what we're talking about over here, this part of the braisa is pointed at Meir. In other places in Shas where the Gemara brings the braisa, in Yevamos and in Ksubos, it quotes it in full. Here the Gemara only brought the part that's relevant for our sugya. But the point is, so the Meir says, the concern is that still she can use a moich beforehand, according to Rashi and the Ram, or afterwards, according to Tosfos, to prevent her from becoming pregnant because the baby can be harmed. So Rashi in those places explains that what may happen is that she becomes pregnant with a second baby on top of the first one, which happens. It's not very common. Usually once a woman is pregnant, she can't become pregnant again, but you do have such a thing. And in medicalese, they call it superfetation. So it's possible. And then what may happen, Rashi explains, in those places, the first baby may get crushed and flattened out by the second one. The second one is growing at the expense of the first one. What? Yeah, the Gemara calls it sandal. The Gemara calls it, so in English it's called superfetation. It happens. It's rare, but it happens. So the mayor is concerned about that possibility. Tosfos, in some of those places, explains a little differently. that what may happen is that the baby that's already in there may get crushed. So no. According to Rashi, what it is the baby that's already in there may get crushed and get flattened out. According to Tosfos, the idea is rather that more that a new baby that starts forming in there may end up becoming a sandal. Whatever the case, the point is Reb Meir is concerned about that. The Chachamim go on to say in the Braisa that they're not concerned about these things and therefore they don't give a heter for Moich. Anyway, the point is that Reb Meir is saying over there that a Ketana can't become pregnant. So if she can't become pregnant, or rather, if she can't carry a baby to full term and therefore be in a position to bring a korban of a yoledes afterwards, then we obviously can't. And the Ran, by the way, mentioned there is a Gemara, one of the places where the Gemara brings this braisa in Yevamos brings up the possibility that maybe actually a girl of that age is able to have children. According to the Chachamim at least, but the Ran says, fine, according to that opinion, we would say as soon as she has a baby, she's actually considered a gdola. So still, by definition, then when she has the baby, she's not a Ketana anymore. Whatever the case, the point is that we obviously therefore can't learn from the word todas to mean that you can bring a korban yoledes on behalf of a Ketana, because we're establishing there's no such thing as a Ketana having a baby. So obviously the word todas doesn't include a Ketana over there. So why is Rabbi Yochanan saying? So what's Rabbi Yochanan's basis for saying that the word todas comes to include a cotton when we're talking about a zo? The answer is, he's zois todas hayaledis. The answer is Rabbi Yochanan still is going to use the word todas hayaledis, but he's going to use it for a slightly different drasha, ben pikachas ben shoita. He's going to say that it applies whether the woman is normal or whether she's a shoita, whether she's mentally deficient. Either way, her husband, and we're talking about she's a gdola, so there's none of the problem that we just talked about of a ketana. Here we're talking about she's a gdola. She just doesn't have normal intelligence. She has whatever the simonim are in halacha of a shoita. She's still capable of becoming pregnant. She's still capable of carrying a baby to full term. So now the fact is, she still wouldn't be able to eat korbanos as a result of the birth, and her husband would bring the korban on her behalf. So we learn from that from the word todas. She can't utter maybe korban al ishtei shoita. Because a man can bring a korban on behalf of his wife who is a shoita. And that way she's now able to eat kodshim kidibir Rabbi Yehuda, and that would be like what Rabbi Yehuda says, which the Ran explains why do we need to specifically mention Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, is because a shoter is anyway potter from mitzvahs. So why should he need to bring a korban on her behalf anyway? But we're going to see in Rabbi Yehuda's statement that a man in general brings korbanos on behalf of his wife, and it goes according to his financial means. D'tanya, as we learn in a braisa, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Adam may be korban osher al ishtoi, a man brings a korban of a rich person on behalf of his wife. Namely, now you have various cases where the Torah tells us that the value of a korban varies according to what you can afford. One of them, in fact, is the case of a yeledes. When a woman gives birth, the Torah tells us if she can afford it, then she brings a sheep and a bird. The sheep is an oila and the bird is a chatas. If she can't afford that, then she brings two birds, one oila, one chatas. Similarly, you have the case of a korban oil of a yodet. You have a few cases where the Torah tells us that a person brings a chatas of adjustable value. If they can afford it, they bring a sheep or a goat. If they can't afford that, they bring two birds. And if they can't even afford that, then they bring a korban mincha. So all those cases, Rabbi Yehuda says, if the husband has money, even though his wife does not have money of her own, because generally speaking, as we learn in Ksumas, anything that belongs to the husband, anything that belongs to the wife, usually is actually under the reshus of her husband. So she doesn't necessarily have resources of her own. Nevertheless, Rabbi Yehuda says, because the husband is rich, then he has to bring the korbanos of a rich person on her behalf. And in general, Rabbi Yehuda says, v'chol korbanos shechayemes. The same thing is true of any other korban that she's chayev. Shekach Kosevla, because he writes her out in the Ksuba that way. He writes her out, the achrayas to Israel Haloi, any achrayas, any responsibility that is on you, min kadmasna, even from beforehand. So even if there's a korban that you, my wife, were chayev in before we ever became married, he's writing into the Ksuba that he is accepting that obligation on himself. Well, that includes the obligations of her korbanos. So therefore, we see that Rabbi Yehuda is saying By the same token, you can say, so in general, Rabbi Yehuda is saying the husband brings the korbanos for on behalf of his wife, meaning that it goes according to his financial resources. Well, by the same token, Rabbi Yehuda can be saying that if the wife is a shoita, even though she's incapable of bringing the korban on her own, the husband can bring it on her behalf. So the word Zois Todas would teach us about that, where she doesn't have das because she's a shoita. Fine. In the case of a yeledis, it can't be a katana, because we said a katana can't carry a baby the full term and safely give birth. But a shoita could. So therefore, so Zois Todas would be talking about that. By the same token, Rabbi Yochanan can be saying, by the same token, if a person has a child, or for that matter, an adult who they're taking care of, who's a shoita, then they can bring a korban on their behalf even without their das. The Ran has a somewhat different gusa in this last line of the Gemara that he quotes the Brice of the Tanya, Odom may be korban ish osher al ishtoi. Again, a man bringing a korban of an osher for his wife, a chol korbanus she chayevis, or any other korbanus that she's chayevin. But Amr of Yehuda, lufrichach im patra, the Ran's gusa is that therefore, if the husband divorces her, ain't chayev bachriyosan, then he's no longer chayev, he's no longer responsible to bring those korbanus, to bring those korbanus on her behalf. Even though she incurred the obligation of the korban while they were married. In other words, suppose she gave birth while they were married, and then they got divorced before she brought his korbanos, before she brought her korbanos. Then Rabbi Yehuda says the husband is no longer obligated. Because the Ran's gear says, on the contrary, she writes to him, when they get divorced and he pays her ksuba, so she writes achrayus the isli aloch min kadmas tana. She writes that I am at this point I've been paid off, and therefore I am waiving any achrayus, any responsibility that I had upon you, meaning that you were responsible because of me min kadmas tana. Up until now, you're no longer chayav. So therefore, so any korbanos, even the ones that she became chayavin while they were married, now that they're divorced, he's no longer chayavin. So that's the Ran's gusa. The point is, in other words, that Rabbi Yehuda is saying it all depends whether they're married or not. So therefore, he's saying that a husband can bring korbanos on behalf of his wife, even though she's a shoita, and therefore Rabbi Yochanan now can say the same thing is true even for a katana. But again, so our Mishnah could be talking about specifically cases of mechusrei kapara. Given that according to Rabbi Yochanan, you don't need the das of the person on whose behalf the korbanos are being brought. The korbanos can be brought without their das. So then, in that case, we can't necessarily say that the shluch, that the kohen is considered the shliach of the person bringing the korban. But in a regular case, when a person comes to the Beis Mikdash with a regular korban, maybe in fact the kohen, if he's also to have enough from this kohen, maybe in fact he would be also for the kohen to bring that korban on his behalf. So the Gemara says, "Must be Rav Shimi ba'Abba." So Rav Shimi ba'Abba says, "What do you mean, though? We have a brisa that says im hoya koyin. Suppose that Shimon, from whom Reuven is also to have anah, if Shimon was a koyin, yizrik all of dam chatosu v'dam hashamay, then he can still sprinkle the blood of Reuven's chatos, so the blood of Reuven's asham, on his behalf." So now we're talking about korbanos that are not from a chusrei kapara. Now, the Ran brings that, why is Rav Shimi ba'Abba not mentioning our Mishnah? In our Mishnah, you have the words Chatosiv HaShomai. Does that mean that Rav Shimi ba'Ashi's version of the Mishnah does not have the word Chatosiv HaShomai, and maybe we shouldn't have it either? But the Ran says no, because the reason why we can understand in our Mishnah, since it mentioned Chatosiv HaShomai in connection with Kinei Zovim and Kinei Zovis, obviously, we're meant to understand that the chatois and ashamos of our Mishnah means the chatos or the ashram of a mitzora. Well, a mitzora is another case of a chusur kapara, and we already established that there's no question the kohen can bring the korban on behalf of a chusur kapara. Mechusar kapara means a person who has not yet brought his korbanos and therefore still has his tahara, is not complete. He can't eat kodshim until he can't enter the Beis Mikdash. He can't eat kodshim until that korban is brought. So fine, the Ram says, in our Mishnah, obviously the Chakas and the Asham, we're talking about that type of Chakas and Asham. But here, where the Braisa mentions Chakas and Asham on their own, maybe it means all Chatois, maybe it means all Ashamos. And most Chatois, most Ashamos are not to make a person be allowed to eat Kodshim. So the Gemara says, no, still, you could say Dam Chatois is Shamatzorah, the Dam Ashamos is Shamatzorah. No, you could still say that the Mishnah means specifically the Chakas and the Asham of the Matzorah. Again, the same word todas, it says in connection with the Mitzvah, this is the law of the Mitzvah. And again, like Rabbi Yochanan Zerusha before, the word todas would teach us that even if the Mitzvah is a child, or as we said before, a shota, still you can bring the korbanos on their behalf without their das, and there's no problem with that, because the purpose of the korban is just to make them allowed to eat kodshim, and for that you don't need their das. So therefore, we would say that in that case, the Shimon, the one from whom Reuben is also kavanah, would be able to bring the korbanos. It doesn't necessarily follow from that other korbanos would that be the case. Maybe when the brayse says chatoris hashamos, it means like in the Mishnah, it means specifically the ones for a mitzvah. Okay, so we'll finish up this discussion tomorrow, Best Hashem, and then we'll go on to other topics in the Mishnah.
Alexander, can you re-explain why the halacha is that there is meila when the Chachamim said there's no meila?
Yes, so because two reasons. First of all, because Reb Nachman understood our Mishnah to be like Reb Meir. So we have a Stam Mishnah like Reb Meir. So therefore, when we have a Stam Mishnah, even though the Braisa tells us there's actually a machlokas on that, that would be a very strong reason to paskin halacha like the Mishnah. Second of all, the Ram says, because there's a Gemara in Shavuos that discusses this point, and says that actually the Braisa is backwards. We have to flip around the Meir's and the Chachamim's opinions. So therefore, it comes out the opinion that says there is Me'ilah by a Kohanim would be the Chachamim's opinion. Well, then as usual, we would go according to the Chachamim.
So that would mean that, but in Mishnah, we would not reverse the opinions, would we?
In the Mishnah, we don't have any opinions. The Mishnah just says Reb Nachman understood the previous Mishnah to be saying that there is Me'ilah B'Koinamis. That is why the payment for Hashavas Aveda has to go to Hekdesh. So the Mishnah didn't even say that there are any other opinions about that. So according to the Braisa, as we have it in front of us, that would be according to the Meir. According to the way it flips it around in Shavuos, it would be. It's according to the Chachamim. Either way, it's a Stam Mishnah.
Mm-hmm. And therefore, the halacha would be like Rebbe Meir.
Therefore, the halacha is going to be like the Stam Mishnah, right?
Yeah. Right. Shkoyach. Okay.